should go. That's what the water shows. Yeah. That's all anyone wanna know. Just who you are, which way you should go. What's your water? When do you see as clear as peering into the water? Is it a close peer reflecting your truest image, refreshing the truth within you? Or is it a song? Is it a psalm? You're clear and calm. And where do you see as deep as looking beneath the water? Study the present tense, the currents, the present tensions, and sense them and swim against. Notice the slippery slope of the mainstream. That's the name of the system that floats many away. Watch the river. Those listening close know where the winds are blowing. Hear whispering in their souls. Water within the scrolls. Waves that can carry you forward. Water that gives you hope. It keeps you afloat. Whole ocean within. They don't get why I always gotta grin. They don't get why I don't always gotta win. Do you know that when I walk in the sun, I get chills? There's an ocean within me. Whole life navigating the skin. There ain't a lot that can faze me. Nowadays, I feel wavy. Like I'm walking on water. I wasn't training the Navy. But we fight for these waters because these waters, they save me. All water is holy water. I bathe in it daily. Now, can you tell me what the water's worth? Or how the water works? Beyond your thirst for it. Your reflection on the surface, the direction of the currents, what they show, a person and a purpose below. Who you are, which way you should go. That's all anyone wanna know. Who you are and which way you should go. That's what the water shows. That's all anyone wanna know. It's who you are and which way you should go. That's what the water shows. But somehow thirst for water became thirst for land. Man, we kill for some land. Drink up the sand. Now there's a whole desert within.
No, this is slippery slope for the mainstream.
My whole world is a desert.
That's the name of the system that floats many away.
And my whole world is at war.
Que en tu vida hay alegría que le das a cada día la energía positiva. Que no importa lo que digan, que eso ya tú lo sabías, pero nunca tú menciones, yo no sé.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We are a progressive politics show broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory on UBC's Point Grey campus. I'm with my co-host, Ajit.
What's up?
And I'm your host, Spencer Latu. And for today's show, we are speaking truth to power about Canada's Green New Deal, missing and murdered Indigenous women inquiry, and Congress 2019 at UBC. But before we get to all that, I would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. So the missing and murdered Indigenous women inquiry has been concluded. It's pretty explosive stuff. I mean, not anything new to anybody that's been following this hundreds of years long disaster and humanitarian catastrophe that is the process of colonization and Canada. So some of the, from the recommendations, we can see that they suggest that the steps to end and redress this genocide, hot topic, this is a very This is a sticking point with conservative camp.
Use the G word.
Yes. Oh, no. Oh, no. Hopefully I didn't trigger any conservatives. Yeah. So the steps to end and redress this genocide must be no less monumental than the combination of systems and actions that has worked to maintain colonial violence for generations. A permanent commitment to ending the genocide requires addressing the four pathways explored within the Missing, Murdered, and Indigenous Women and Girls report, namely, one, historical, multigenerational, and intergenerational trauma. Two, social and economic marginalization. Three, maintaining the status quo and institutional lack of will. And four, ignoring the agency and expertise of Indigenous women, girls, and 2SLGBTQQIA people. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty fair set of recommendations, Ajit, that to do something about the historical injustices and multi-generational, intergenerational trauma. That's a good place to start, you know.
Right, absolutely.
Maybe undoing the disaster, the genocidal act of residential schools would be a good place to begin, to say the least.
Well, the most obvious.
Yeah, I mean, the Truth and Reconciliation report already came out, but that wasn't enough, so at least now we're discussing it again. Social and economic marginalization, that one's going to be a lot harder for people to get their wrap their heads around because... Mm. As we've noticed with certain goings on at the University of British Columbia, racism is very prevalent.
Right.
You know, so this is not going to be easy to get these people back into, you know, back to normal standing with the majority of the Canadian population, which views Indigenous people as subhuman. So that's going to be a sticking point for sure.
Right.
Economic marginalization. People have crapped their pants over the carbon tax.
Right.
So I wonder how
they're gonna, do you prove that?
Yeah, I wonder how they're going to feel about, you know, giving back some of the resources they stole from Indigenous folks.
Hey, we reappropriated them, okay?
Yeah,
and made it useful.
Yeah, okay.
Trade and such and build great societies.
Okay,
sorry, that's my
John
old stock
Locke.
Voice.
That's yeah, your old stock Canadian John Locke impersonation. Right. Yeah, so the old stock Canadians are struggling to understand what needs to happen to fix the genocide G word, and just looking at these recommendations. Well, they call them calls for justice in the report, which I think is amazing, and I think that's definitely the way to frame it, because this is unjust, right? This is not fair. This is not, you know, this is not the way things have to be. This is not like gravity, you know, or like some kind of like law of nature right. that right. Indigenous people need to be oppressed. It's a very historical phenomenon of colonizers coming in.
It's almost become such a permanent fixture in history that people do assume it is necessary. That's the sad part.
That is very sad. That was a great observation there. And yeah, and let's talk about, you know, the agency and expertise of Indigenous women and girls and 2SLGBTQQIA people. I love that's the final call for justice, because it feels as if nobody cares what they have to say about anything.
Right.
You know, I saw this clip of an Indigenous woman yelling at John Horgan that Canada is not a country, it's a corporation. And I was like, yes, that's exactly. We need more of that. That's what we need to listen to. You
right.
know, some really
truth bomb.
Yeah, truth. Pop. It's stuff that makes, you know, that makes people very uncomfortable, especially the fairer skin you get. They get more and more uncomfortable hearing that. So
right.
speaking of fair skinned people who are very easily triggered, Romeo Dallaire. So this guy, Canadian general peacekeeper guy. Very famous guy. He was there for the Rwandan genocide. I read his book as a kid, so I was introduced very early to imperialist propaganda. So when it comes to calling this a genocide, which, Ajit, if you could pull up for me the UN definition of genocide, because I did not do that.
Sure.
Romeo Dallaire says that I'm not comfortable with that, with referring to the Canadian genocide that the Missing, Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls inquiry called it. He says he's not comfortable with that. And he goes on to say that my definition of genocide, I read it very deliberately at the start of the Rwandan genocide, and it was a deliberate act of a government to exterminate deliberately and by force and directly an ethnicity or a group of human beings, and that meant actually going and slaughtering people. So that's Romeo Dallaire's definition of it. That's his.
Right.
Not the UN's definition.
Well, it very much closely lines up with the definition. It's as follows. It's Article 2 of the 1948 UN Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide defines genocide as any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group as such, killing members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group, and forcibly transferring children of the group to another group.
Okay.
I think,
so
recapping Canadian history, we check off most of these.
Yeah. So, okay, let's work our way back. So
right.
The last one that I remember you saying, removing children from their families. So
right.
This happens every day. It happens all the time. It's a common problem, and as we read from Red Women Rising, that report from the Downtown Eastside Women's Center, that the Ministry of Child and Family Development actually, you know, was basically implicated every single homeless indigenous woman's life, where they were taken away from their families for, you know, generally it's not about like bad parenting, it's never about that, it's about lack of resources, and then ironically enough, the state then pays, you know, a non-indigenous family money to look after the child.
Right. What's even more nefarious, you could say, is that...
So it's not about the money. The money, like, you know, they have the money. They could just give the indigenous family the money, but instead they take the child away and do an act of genocide.
Right. This transfer is done at the behest of this, you know, this this body, this organ of the so-called welfare state, right? So, you know, it just shows you how much more, you know... devious.
Yeah, it is. It's, and like, you know, Romeo Dallaire is like, well, it's not direct. I'm like, well, I mean, it's pretty, you know.
Well, you can add a bunch of levels to it and do it. It doesn't change.
Yeah,
a few
more steps, right? Okay, and then of course we have what were some other clauses in there, Ajit? Because I'm pretty sure we can find pretty quick historical examples. Oh, killing people. The mass execution. the largest mass execution at Fort Battleford, Saskatchewan, of Cree men in 1885 during the Northwest Rebellion.
Right.
So there you go. You know, we had the hanging judge of New West, Judge Begbie, who killed over a dozen indigenous men and sentenced them to death.
Right.
So we do kill them in these, like, you know, kangaroo court show trial ways. So
And that's outside of the battlefield, too.
That's by the state, too, Romeo. So just saying there.
Causing serious bodily or mental harm.
Oh, okay. So, you know, mental illness prevalent across every single reserve.
Right. Why is there substance abuse?
Yeah.
It's a suicide of mental health.
Suicides through the roof.
Right.
So, I mean, like, come on. You know, the boxes are very easy to check. We have, you know, two fresh out of university people figuring this out. So
you're going to like this one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, one more.
Imposing measures intended to prevent births.
It's forced sterilization of women. We covered it on the show. It's like... You know, not only do we check one box.
The dots just had to be connected at one point.
And it's not even that you have to do every single thing to be a genocide.
One
of them is enough.
Right.
We do all of them.
Right.
So we're like, you know, we're top tier genociders.
The nice Canadians do all of them.
Yeah. It's, yeah, the good old Canadian, the old stock Canadians, as Stephen Harper would like to say.
Yeah.
And then you had Stephen Harper's former Indigenous Affairs Minister, who's not calling it calling it a genocide is wrong. So there, that's Conservative Canada for you.
Right.
But actually, the Conservative Party did, to their credit, distance themselves from that guy. But I'm sure they all secretly think that. But that's me trying to read their minds. So, yeah. To say the least, that this was I'm happy this report happened. I'm upset that people are triggered by the term genocide, and now we'll just go la 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 la, cover their ears, and then put their heads in the sand.
Oh, but
white Canada.
Right. It's because we were building a nation. It's this and that, right?
All the excuses come out.
Guilt. Right. But I think we're both very happy over the specific terminology that was used.
Yes. Yeah. It's some kind of progress, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, real progress would be giving the land back to Indigenous folks, but we're a few generations away from that stuff.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, before we go to commercial, in the next little bit, UBC Congress 2019.
Mm.
So
right outside
the CITR booth, baby, we have from the CBC, Nova Scotia, student says he was racially profiled at UBC-held Congress. Shelby McPhee says he was asked to show his Congress registration and falsely accused of stealing a laptop. This is written by Karen Larson of CBC News, posted June 5th, 2019. So Shelby McPhee was asked to show his Congress registration and falsely accused of stealing a laptop. So basically, he got pulled over by random. Okay, we'll tell the story then. Then I've got a bunch of zingers ready for everybody.
Sure.
So Shelby is attending the UBC Congress. He was just another person there. He's a speaker too, invited speaker. And then a white couple, man and woman, lose their laptop or have their laptop stolen.
Right.
They were sitting earlier that day with Mr. McPhee, which, you know, he was sitting with them earlier. The laptop goes missing and he's black.
Right.
If that wasn't already clear. Mr. McPhee is a African Canadian. And he's come from the Black Canadian Studies Association. Wow, that'll be one paper to read from this whole thing.
He's an academic.
Yeah, and he's asked to show his Congress registration. So it's basically like getting pulled over by the cops, except it's by this like white couple being, hey, show us your registration or your license to registration. I mean, just registration.
Right. You know?
They're watching too much cops.
Yeah.
The RCMP obviously harass him because the UBC RCMP are definitely not the best and the brightest of the RCMP task force. That's why they're sent here. And they treat him like a suspect because he's black, of course, you know, no one's innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, as the cops theme song begins with. And naturally the complaint was completely groundless because, you know, this guy's he's an academic, not a laptop thief. He just so happens to be black. And going on from there, it's really hard because UBC is often, as I like to complain about on this show, a fake progressive institution. And moments like these really expose this campus and generally the vibe of academia for what it is, which is an inherently white supremacist, very hierarchical, where white and powerful people seem at least more important than just anybody else, you know, even you know, people like Mr. McPhee, and get treated like absolute garbage all the time. I mean, I think it's close to half of students at UBC reported feeling discrimination. You know, we have one guy at, you know, this big event, UBC Congress, which is supposed to be this, you know, huge assortment of social sciences and humanities people. And we can't even get through that without someone getting, you know, being treated horribly by racists.
Right.
Ajit, any thoughts?
Not really surprising, you could say. It's saddening. I mean, I don't know.
It surprising?
No, it's not. It's like, I don't know. It's what I'm curious about is that if it was a white guy there, would they have just been like fine with their laptop getting stolen?
Well, there
like...
was a white. There was Mr. McPhee was sitting with his friend, and I don't know if the friend he was sitting with was white, but he was black, so naturally they went with him first. This white couple, no evidence, of course, followed him around, took pictures of him, and called the cops on him. So and quite frankly, calling the cops on people is an act of violence in and of itself.
Oh,
because,
absolutely.
You know, what are they going to do, right? You know, these people are, you know, just completely, you know, screwy up top with guns. So what do you expect is going
to
happen?
And the paradox, which is policing, is that most people tend to feel fear when they see the police as opposed to security.
I absolutely am shitting a brick every time I see a cop. That's just me. I've read too many books about the cops. Okay, so we're going to have to take a short break for commercial, but we'll be right back discussing Canada's Green New Deal.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day.
Pick up a copy around Vancouver or with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM. With Relly Rails and Jules Andre Brown.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latchey Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from NCU Musqueam Territory. We are now joined by our very, very special guest, Nusha Semi.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back, Nusha. Nusha joined us last week on the program to discuss the Green New Deal and the very intricate theoretical and historical problems that it presents. So we're picking up where we left off. We discussed a lot of the issues here with it. And just to give a quick summary from the words of the messenger herself, here's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
The Democrats took back the House in 2018 and then the Senate and the White House in 2020. And launched the decade of the Green New Deal, a flurry of legislation that kicked off our social and ecological transformation to save the planet. It was the kind of swing for the fence ambition we needed. Finally, we were entertaining solutions on the scale of the crises we faced without leaving anyone behind. That included Medicare for All, the most popular social program in American history. We also introduced the federal jobs guarantee, a public option including dignified living wages for work. Funnily enough, the biggest problem in those early years was a labor shortage. We were building a national smart grid, retrofitting every building in America, putting trains like this one all across the country. We needed more workers. That group of kids from my neighborhood were...
Okay, I'll stop her there. That's from an Intercept article put together by Naomi Klein, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Just a very problematic bunch of people, yeah, as we're going to get to in the later.
And also the artist of that video, which I feel like has gone viral now. Her name is Molly Crabapple. I don't know if you know her, but she's like has a very notorious history doing the drawings and stuff for PR for the war on Syria, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. So
connection to another imperialist war.
And I have a friend who sort of like analyzes her work like from a critical perspective and says that in this video that she draws for the Green New Deal for AOC, for Ocasio-Cortez, she uses actually a lot of like imagery, like Illuminati type imagery and
no.
stuff that can seem pretty reactionary, but it slips by the eye because it's so catchy. And it's almost like the content, the truth about the deal comes out if you like really pay attention.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, just like, you know, like we're all paying attention closely. And, you know, if you were listening, you would hear my trigger word that makes me go crazy. Yeah. Smart grid.
Right.
The phrase that just gets thrown into everything. I mean, what? You don't want a grid, Spencer? It's certainly not a smart one. It's better than a dumb grid. What's wrong with you?
And you made a good point. We don't even know like what happens, how it works, if it's like safe. I was telling my friend about it today.
5G, yes.
Yeah, she like studies, she sort of looks at like sustainable development goals, UN stuff. And I was telling her about like our show and this and about the smart grid and how Spencer, you were saying, and the smart grid, like addendum, we don't even know how it works. And she was like, yeah, that really resonated with her. She was like, we don't. Like,
yeah, no, this is all theoretical stuff. Yeah. 5G technology that's being rolled out by the largest telecommunications companies in the world, Huawei in China, Sprint, T-Mobile in the United States. And, you know, we'll have Bell and Telus on it up here. And the thing is, we don't even know the health impacts. You know, there's scientists and doctors that are saying that, you know, this could prove health risks because it turns out that putting, you know, Bluetooth signals, Wi-Fi signals, like all those like, you know, 5G data stuff in your, I'm not a math scientist, so I'm not a techie nerd, sorry everybody. And you know, we don't know what's going to do to human beings. So maybe having, you know, your microwave, toaster, dishwasher all cooked up, you know, cooking in your kitchen will not be cooking the food, but cooking you instead with all that radiation. Right. So who even knows what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, not very green.
Or the surveillance system.
Yeah. Lest we forget that if you're constantly on Wi-Fi, which is how they track people, is that, you know, as you check into Wi-Fi hotspots is how they know exactly, you know, where you are at all times. So there you go. That's a huge problem right then and there. And who else is a big part of, you know, smart cities, you know, Google and Sidewalk Labs in Toronto. That's their subsidiary that is building the smart city that the locals have kicked out because they know that it is just a surveillance tyrannical system, and they don't want Google knowing everything about everybody in the city, because what could go wrong?
They already know too much.
Yeah. Okay.
Resistance in Canada.
Yeah, there was the real resistance, and you know, and we're gonna get back into what it takes, because this is gonna be, unfortunately. Yeah, I guess we should do some primers here before we, you know, get into the Green New Deal. First of all, climate change is real.
Yes.
We're not coming at this from a perspective that climate change is not real. Thus, do not worry about any of this stuff. The climate change is very real. However, the solutions that are being offered by the Rockefeller Foundation, Silicon Valley, the telecommunications giants,
Wall Street,
big energy, and the military industrial complex.
Stealing from public pensions.
Stealing from us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is reverse Robin Hood, stealing from the poor to give to the rich, to increase, ironically enough, the system that is causing climate change, which is, you know, mass consumption of goods that people don't need, right? So that's like how many massive corporations are built on that, Walmart, Starbucks, and the like.
All of them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. All of them are based off false needs, you know, like the spectacle, as we were discussing via Guy Debord. I sent those YouTube videos. Which is where I learned my philosophies from YouTube. And the other problem, too, is not just mass consumption, but war.
Mm.
Imperialist wars of aggression, which, you know, where we destroy states such as, you know, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, looking at Venezuela, looking at Iran, looking at North Korea.
Right.
And that is what causes climate change, because you're destroying the people, the land, the resources to be extracted and turned into commodities to be mass consumed. And then obviously those tanks, you know, weapons, systems and the like, and the bomber jets, you know, they certainly use fossil fuels, and that's far worse than, you know, even people like going on a plane to Las Vegas and back. Like,
do we know what percentage of climate change is from the U.S. military? It was like really high.
In 1 year, I think it was, I'm 95% sure, 2015, 70 million tons of carbon dioxide. But in all other, especially in the Paris Agreement and all those other climate agreements, military emissions are not counted,
of course,
because, you know, that's part of the ledger, right? You factor in imperialist wars of aggression, and which is why on the show and why we're discussing the Green New Deal and critiquing the Green New Deal is that, you know, I feel, I'll speak for Ajit, and, you know, I'll speak for Nusha, that we feel that, you know, the real problems, the real causes are not being addressed, but instead, you know, not only are they not being addressed, but we're going to create new problems, such as stealing all our pensions to pay for stuff that will surveil us.
Right.
In a nutshell.
And the ruling class, like, profits as the climate destroys everything and makes it uninhabitable for all of us in our smart grid cities.
Yeah, and our nice little surveillance grid. So when you think about revolting, they're already five steps ahead of you.
Yeah.
So if you thought it was bad enough, the Snowden revelations weren't enough to know that we're all being spied on all the time.
Right.
Here we are. So why we're talking about the Green New Deal? So I saw a few articles in the news recently that piqued my attention. So the NDP is coming out with a Green New Deal plan. So we have the PDF that we're going to be looking through. And on top of that, we also have the Canadian Connection. So this is from the TIE. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal, The Canadian Connection, How Naomi Klein and Avi Lewis Are Helping AOC Reboot U.S. Politics. So this is by Jeff Dembicki, posted on the 3rd of June 2019. So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the insurgent Democrat who who primaried Joe Crowley, you know, very exciting stuff. She's a Democratic Socialist of America, but she also has a nice little imperial streak to her that people are not really talking about. So she has some very horrible views on Israel. She's a supporter of the two-state solution, a.k.a. no solution. She fell silent on Venezuela. You know, is she denouncing the Syria gas attacks as being fake? No, because she's not a true leftist.
Right, and also, like, silent on Venezuela, but what she was actually doing underneath the silence was voting congressional bills to seize, like, millions, tens of millions of dollars from Venezuelan banks' assets. So, like, yeah.
Yeah, she's part and parcel of the war machine. So, and then Naomi Klein and Avi Lewis. So these are two Canadians. Naomi Klein is a famous author who decades ago was super rad and super awesome and really writing some amazing critical books. No Logo, a classic, I would say. Avi Lewis is the is the guy behind the LEAP manifesto. However, these two have fallen down a deep rabbit hole of the what we call the not-for-profit industrial complex, or the NGO industrial complex. And what that is that the influence of the structure of basically a corporate version of activism has, when you work within these things, you end up serving the people who are funding you, and who are the people funding these NGOs, right? So there's the Rockefeller Foundation, which basically completely funds 350.org. So the Rockefellers certainly are not woke climate heroes, okay, people? They're you know, they're the robber barons 100 years ago, and let's just say not much has changed in that time, right? So that's who's funding that. Naomi Klein, she also is horrible in Venezuela. She called the Maduro regime. Also, why do I, you know, and that's how mainstream media works. I even refer to it as regime. Yeah. The Maduro government.
Right.
Okay, there you go. You know, self-criticism right there. Maduro government, a petro-populist government. So, you know, why is Naomi Klein calling this, you know, making up this, you know, this pseudo-left term to describe them? Well, it's because she's trying to green light and gaslight the people, but green light, you know, the U.S. U.S. CIA-sponsored coup of Venezuela.
Right.
Is, and under this very sketchy guise of, oh, this will save the environment because they have the largest oil fields. Which is just, like, reprehensible. Avi Lewis.
And at the same time, they're like, because of the sanctions, electricity is going out in Venezuela. So people there are suffering in that regard, too. But it's being hidden that all of these, like, U.S. imperialist actors are, you know, allowing this electricity shortage to occur in Venezuela. So we think about that kind of attack as well on their resources.
Yeah, it's never covered in mainstream media. And if it does, it's pinned on Maduro.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which is just horrible. So we have these Canadians, Avi Lewis, another one of them, who famously discussed how, you know, democracy is not really necessary. We don't need to, you know, God forbid that, you know, the people that transferred over all the, you know, that caused this entire climate crisis, that the people who are now going to suffer from it shouldn't, you know, I believe that, you know, if our futures are going to be destroyed by climate change, or we're at least entitled to the resources that came at our expense, the expense of our future, you know, that we could start working backwards towards it. But Avi Lewis and Naomi Klein are instead, you know, serving their masters, the masters that pay for their, you know, lavish, you know, leftist celebrity lifestyles. Left-ish, pseudo-left, whatever you want to call them, lifestyles.
TV and, left.
Yeah,
TV left. I like that.
Democracy Now left, yeah.
Yeah.
And they...
Before Haiti. Yeah. After Haiti.
After Haiti. Yeah. While these people are, you know, and we make these jokes because all these people are getting their money from these foundations, so they're all paid by the same people. If your employer is all the same person, you know, generally you do what your employer tells you to do. I mean, how free are you at work?
Right.
Why would these people be any freer than you to do?
And they're helping these people out who are exploiting the working class, the people they claim to represent. So it's just like this most cynical, you know, trick in the book.
It's really savage because, you know, we're you know, and I, you know, I got my, you know, entrance into leftism and, you know, learning about, you know, critical theory and stuff like that through these outlets. But in reality, they're a dead end. If that's all you learn, you'll never learn or see beyond it because, you know, that's just like, you know, that's where they try to trap people. And that's why we're trying to give this information out because, you know, all the people that are discussing, you know, rebelling against the oil oligarchs and the, you know, and people who are getting involved in social movements and protesting for the first time in their lives. That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
Do not do it with these people. Do not serve their agenda. You know, you are correct. We do need a rebellion. We do need to revolt. But we certainly do not need to do it through these people. And, you know, let's begin with, you know, where the Green New Deal came from. Right. So the New Deal. You know, if Nusha, you give us a quick, you know, recap of why the New Deal the first time, although it's now heralded as saving capitalism or saving the working class or getting America out of the Great Depression. You know, what did it really do?
Right. So like the Green New Deal now is modeled. I mean, it has two aspects. It has the economic aspect of what the New Deal promises to do with like the public treasuries and the state. And like certain bills. And then there's a sustainability green aspect on how they're trying to deal with the fossil fuel switching to these green technologies. So the New Deal, the economic aspect of it, is based off of FDR, Roosevelt's New Deal before World War II in the States, which claimed to like increase profitability and jobs. In fact, in truth, what actually did sort of increase U.S. capital was how the U.S. acted and won after World War II and mobilized the people. But what the New Deal was really doing, it was legislature that was allowing the U.S. government to make investments with certain banks and corporations, and the investments, the people who at the end had to pay it back, all of the debt that the U.S. state had, was the public. It comes out of the public treasuries in the Green New Deal. All of these investments made with like green technology companies, the people who are going to pay it back obviously is the American public. I mean, the American public owes trillions to the government in mortgage,
and credit card debt, right, auto debt.
Exactly. Health insurance. So the Green New Deal is going to come out of public pensions, which explains a lot of how the rhetoric around the Green New Deal is targeting the boomer generation, or like this old generation, the ones that are not going to have any money for retirement, that we're not. So in some ways, a lot of it is hinging on this like generational divide as well, when it's really the American public of all ages, genders, you know, everything, who's going to be paying for this.
Well, thank you, Nusha. And, you know, and, you know, hey, I'm a reactionary and I'm just going to say, Nusha, you know, that's some weird neo-Marxist stuff you came up with. No serious person would say that. Well, let's hear what Al Gore had to say in 2013 about, you know, about this exact topic. So here's a little clip from Al Gore.
You know, it's probably a bad analogy because it's like a lot of analogies, very inexact. But the economic historians remind us that even though we give FDR and the New Deal the credit for ending the Great Depression, what really ended it was World War II, when we mobilized for a great national effort in which the survival of our country and our values was deemed to be at stake. If we as a nation make a commitment to mobilizing to solve this crisis, there's no doubt we can solve it. And there's no doubt that when we start solving it, we're going to create jobs. And lots and lots and lots of them. And we're going to give young people hope and optimism.
Okay, so that was Al Gore discussing international bourgeoisie.
That Marxist?
Yeah, that crazy lefty Al Gore. You know, talk about more, you know, corporate friendly guy than Al Gore. Claims to live a carbon free life because he purchased carbon offsets as he flies in a private jet all around the world.
Driving that Lear around.
Yeah, so that's where we're at. And so basically, And if you know for the skeptics out there, you know, let's just take a quick, you know, quick peruse through the literature that is out and about the Green New Deal. So some really really brutal, I would say, you know, truth that we all need to, you know, deal with is we need to talk about, you know, the creation. The duty of the federal government to create a new Green New Deal. So this is the House resolution that was put out by AOC, and so in it, it sets out goals for the Green New Deal, and basically what, you know, will come out of this quote unquote environmental movement. So, you know, goal A: achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions through a fair and just transition for all communities and workers. So, what does net zero mean? That means that, you know, as much carbon as you put out there, you know, building your, you know, stupid crap that you sell in dollar stores, all the mass-produced commodities and cell phones and all the stuff that we really don't need, all the electronics, all the Google Homes and Alexas and all the other crap that people really don't need. You know, as long as we take the carbon out of the air, we're cool.
Right.
That's all that means. So to create millions of good high-wage jobs to ensure prosperity and economic security for all people of the United States, you know, God forbid that, you know, instead of, you know, having the government as your employer, you know, you could just, I don't know, maybe have like your own worker co-op and, so, you know, have your own sustainable life on your own. You don't really need to, you know, work towards the, you know, the greater good of the state.
Well, even inserting that whole clause in, it's like, isn't that your goal anyways? Like, creating millions of high-wage jobs?
Well, I mean, like, you know, it's still, it doesn't address, like, the fact that, you know, these people, right? Like, and
right, it doesn't mean anything, really. It's just, like, a kind of a fixture. You're just restating a fixture.
It's nothing clear on it. Like, right. You know, it doesn't even say, like, oh, these people, you know, we're not going to be living in, you know, serfdom, which is what currently most people are. You know, right. It just leaves it very vague. And, like, don't get me wrong, I would love if everyone had, like, a good job and a good place in this world. But, you know, if you start trusting the American government to deliver that for you, well, good luck to you. Goal C, invest in infrastructure and industry of the United States to sustainably meet the challenges of the 21st century. Okay, that's, yeah, you know, very 1984-esque language. Challenges of the 21st century could be anything from World War III to, you know, putting down, you know, this movement of people that finally wakes up to realize the Green New Deal is not all that it seems.
It's unclear idealism.
Yeah, well, it's who God knows
what it means,
what these people are talking about. So repairing and upgrading the infrastructure of the United States, and then, as we discussed there, the eliminating of pollution and greenhouse gas emissions, which is good. However, you know, how are we going to do that? We're talking net zero. So that's just, you know, that could mean we just go with nuclear instead, or we go with solar panels and wind turbines, which, you know, are better than fossil fuels. But once again, you know, they require raw materials to build.
Right.
Where are they going to come from? Probably the countries we're bombing.
It's very difficult to get that balance, that equivalency, which net zero requires.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we're unfortunately poised between a rock and a hard place here, to say the least, that, you know, the corporate state has kind of set it up so that the Green New Deal seems like, you know, our ticket out that we all need to organize around and we need to push it. But if you take a hard look at it, or not so hard of a look, to be completely honest with you, it's not what it seems, people.
It's seizing the opportunity by the ruling class, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's, you know, we need to see this opportunity as the working class. Mm. You know, this is our time to revolt. You know, let's learn from the Great Depression. You know, they kept the system the way it was. You know, they paid out of their pockets, out of their tax dollars to, you know, basically keep themselves, you know, or just keep the system going up until this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't see the point of going back into it. We have to take a short break for commercials, but we'll be right back.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Heavy Metal Radio. It'll have you saying, yeah. Tune in every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Lattu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory. So we're returning back to the Green New Deal, and so we're looking at the House resolution that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is putting into U.S. Congress. And so this is not law, but this is just a guideline of how they're going to go about it. So we don't have the exact details, but just from what we're looking at is, you know, we should be very skeptical because we don't know exactly what they're coming up with. So as we look through the clauses, I see the most... the worst part about the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez Green New Deal, which is this. So promoting the international exchange of technology, expertise, products, funding, and services with the aim of making the United States the international leader on climate action and to help other countries achieve a Green New Deal. So I would like to turn to my special guest. Nusha, what does that mean to you? Just some off the top thoughts.
Do you mind reading it again? Because I have one resolution in my head and I feel like I mixed it up.
Oh, okay. No, yeah. Okay. So promoting the international exchange of technology, expertise, products, funding, and services with the aim of making the United States the international leader on climate action and to help other countries achieve a Green New Deal.
Right. Okay. Yeah. There's a few lines in there actually that have this similar message. But yeah, it's basically a message of U.S. imperial power in this new economic transition from fossil fuels like oil and everything to whatever technologies, green technologies, this is working out. And that's also because this coincides with this time where there's sort of a competition and like potential splits between imperialist powers. I mean, historically, the U.S. has been the main imperialist power since the end of World War II, since 1946, since the Bretton Woods dollarization system, since the Nixon shock and everything where all gold, and then after the detachment of gold to the dollar, all of it was at the U.S. dollar as the standard in the world. So, like, that sets the U.S. as an imperialist power, but now we're in this place where there's a potential U.S.-EU split, like what we saw with the whole Huawei thing, and sanctions on Iran and the Iran deal. There's Russia, there's China. So this is also an opportunity, as we saw with FDR's New Deal, which, you know, was anticipating a world war and sought to mobilize people. The Green New Deal in this transition, which also happens at a man-made climate change transition, is sort of anticipating this World War III scenario, but it's also, this deal is preserving the U.S. in its matrix of, like, now U.S. climate imperialism.
And do you think that, you know, because I really enjoyed your point about Bretton Woods and the gold standard. So, right. You know, the United States is now obviously not on the gold standard. It's been the petrodollar, right? So the petrodollar is, you know, all oil is traded in American money. So basically, you know, America is now the world's world reserve currency. So, you know, maybe this is me speculating here, and, you know, I don't have an economics degree, but from what it looks like, it seems as if, you know, this new, and we're going to discuss this more, the new financial instruments. So just the one off the top is, you know, carbon pricing, carbon tax, carbon offsets, these kinds of, you know, these
cap and trade.
Right. Thank you, Ajit. These we're talking about nature here, right? So, but these are man-made ways of dealing with, you know, man's control of nature, which is that instead of, you know, not polluting, because God forbid we don't pollute, we'll use a market mechanism of, you know, paying extra to pollute. And it seems as if Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and, you know, all the forces behind her, which we'll get into later, of, you know, all these Rockefeller foundations and even the Atlanta Council's in on this one, that they're going to shift away from the petrodollar, which, you know, there's not going to be burning of fossil fuels anymore, but instead it will be, you know, these climate offsets, these carbon offsets, you know, and every country will have a Green New Deal now. So whether or not you wanted it or not, here it is, yeah. Courtesy of the US of A, you know, instead of spreading democracy, I guess now they're spreading environmentalism, right? Yeah. That'll be the new casus belli.
Environmentalist imperialism.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be like, hey, there's these evil fossil fuel burning people. We need to go in there and put in, you know, we need to go and destroy all the forests and put in solar panels.
Or people are oppressing the weather, which is basically oppressed identity is the weather.
Yeah, right. And so now maybe the U.S. will move away from the petrodollar and go into these financial instruments, and that this will be the new, like, you know, way that they control the world economic system. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that that's exactly right. I mean, like, Bretton Woods was this, I don't want to overexplain maybe something that is commonly understood, but, like, Bretton Woods was this meeting that happened after World War II in Washington, D.C., where basically all these, like, ministers of economics and leaders and everything were deciding that they were going to peg international trade at the gold standard, and the gold standard was going to be priced against the U.S. dollar.
Mm-hmm.
The Nixon shock in 71 unpegged it, detached it from the gold standard, but maintained it as the U.S. dollar, which was increasing U.S. imperial power as, like, Japan and these other countries were losing prominence. And we switched to the petrodollar, as you said, and now it's these, like, carbon offset, whatever.
The carbon dollar.
Yeah, carbon dollar.
The climate dollar.
Right, exactly. But we're still maintaining U.S.
The
power
structure.
Over it.
U.S. Yeah. Number one.
Yeah.
U.S. at the front, in control of the empire. But now they're doing it through another means, which is, you know, we're not dealing with what caused climate change, which I would argue is U.S. imperialism.
Right.
And instead, we're solidifying U.S. imperialism through, you know, the green language. And, you know, to get into more how dystopic this is, you know, so we have the Climate Finance Partnership.
Mm.
This is, you know, this sounds really sad. Who is in the partnership? BlackRock, you know, one of the world's, I think it's the world's largest investment group.
Yeah.
You know, they basically control, you know, people think, oh, Jeff Bezos is the most powerful man in the world. He's not, you know, it's because BlackRock is
these associations of rich people.
Mm. Yeah, and who they pay into, you know, right. Obviously Jeff Bezos is, you know, the BlackRock fund pays into, controls Amazon, right? So this is kind of, you know, once we get into the interlocking board of directors of the world, these are the kind of parties that show up. So
what's
not a lot
like
of them.
The comic book names for these, like Cobra or like.
Yeah, Cobra. Cobra Kai or something like that. Yeah, but this is basically who it is. We have the governments of France and Germany, IKEA Foundation are all in on the climate finance partnership.
IKEA.
Yeah, right. So IKEA of all meatballs. People, you know, oh, do we have enough stuff in this world? Nope. IKEA's found a way to sell you more crap, right? Because that has nothing to do with climate change,
right?
Why
does it have a charity? Why does it have a lobby group, right?
Yeah, right. So these people, you know, and this was posted on the Atlantic Council website. So we're getting in who is the Atlantic Council? Well, they're comprised of corporate CEOs from the military-industrial complex. There's also military people sitting on those boards. And, of course, the Atlantic Council is also tasked with Facebook. So Facebook censorship is handled by the Atlantic Council, of all people. So this is how, you know, extremely 1984-esque we can get here. You know, like, Orwellian gets thrown a lot. But this is, you know, this is very Orwellian. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, why do all these people matter? Like, oh, so who cares, Spencer? So what? BlackRock is taking an interest in the environment. BlackRock is now woke. Well, you know, person I'm arguing with, let's discuss, you know, what they're after, right? So why are these people, you know, working on this project, right, of, you know, saving the climate, aka climate imperialism, as we were discussing earlier? So there is $100 trillion held by pension funds. So this is from an analysis of the World Bank. There's $100 trillion held by pension funds and other institutional investors. These same investors allocated less than $2 trillion over a 25-year period into infrastructure investment in emerging markets. And the fraction of that investment that could be considered, so the amount of money that's in public pensions that is considered green, clean, or climate-friendly was negligible. So what can be done? This is from the same article from the Atlantic Council website about the climate finance partnership with BlackRock, France, Germany, and the IKEA Foundation. So what can be done about these public pension funds worth $100 trillion? So this is everything that everybody in every worker of the world pays into. So
right. Everything
that we're all worth, that we're all going to retire on. What can be done about that money? Whether you choose to look through the lens of unprecedented challenge or unprecedented opportunity, there is violent agreement that institutional capital needs to be unlocked.
Violent agreement.
And mobilized quickly and at scale.
And that's the definition of fascism.
Yeah, so they're going to take our money and they're going to build the surveillance, radioactive, just
and sell it back to us.
And you're supposed
and force
to be
having, it on us.
Yeah, force it on us, and then if you speak out, well, Google will come listen to you, right? Mm. So, and that's why I'm critical of this. This is why, you know, I started doing some digging as somebody that was involved in this movement for fighting for the Green New Deal, because I want a Green New Deal. Nusha, you know, what do you think we need to, you know, do you think, you know, there needs to be action on climate change?
I feel like the true action of against climate change is socialism, is getting rid of capitalism,
yeah,
and imperialism, the U.S. military. But also, yeah, I think that there needs to be like some kind of
something?
Pressure, reform, something, but not this.
Not this.
Yeah.
Not this. You know, I was in on it. I was, you know, I was one of those people trying to organize these climate strike marches. You know, I'm trying to, get people mobilized because climate change is real. We need to do something. Nobody's doing anything about anything. However, you know, I was playing, you know, I'll use a football metaphor because that's all I can think about is football. I was playing by the wrong playbook, to say the least. You know, I'm using the corporate playbook
right, to
play this game. You know, we need the people's playbook. You know, we need something, a socialist playbook to deal with this, because we don't need BlackRock and IKEA, you know, taking over our funds to do this, you know, climate whatever they're working on. So, you know, even the... So it's all our money. It's going into the global rulers. And if you think I'm reading this wrong, you know, here's the, you know, the COP23 president. So that was a climate summit that, you know, in 2017 that really did nothing for it. Yeah. So this is Frank Bainimarama, the prime minister of Fiji. He said that, you know, when discussing what to do about the climate crisis and, you know, using $100 trillion of our money, he says, after all, when we talk about tapping into the vast amounts of institutional capital for climate solutions, we are largely talking about the retirement savings of ordinary hardworking citizens, and we need to honor the expectation of being good stewards with the money. So this is our money is now going into multi-billion-dollar corporations, you know, the same corporations that landed us in this, the same corporations that are the 100 companies that are causing 71% of emissions, the military-industrial complex, which creates the weapons to be used to kill black and brown people all over the global south, And, you know, so we're paying for it, but we can't own it.
Right.
So we just have to give it up. Oh, because that would be communism. Mm. Oh, God forbid. You know, the things that you get, you pay for, you know. Right. But if you're giving it to a corporation, that's good.
So, and they use it against you at the end of the day.
Socialism for the rich, you know, yeah. Feudalism for the rest of us. Mm-hmm. Capitalism is long gone. Right. What Adam Smith was writing about is a
non-existent.
It's a historical
right.
you know, piece.
And it really rings when you said socialism for the rich, because I feel like this whole fake left of AOC right. and all of these Democrats who are supporting the New Deal are pushing socialism, but it really is socialism for the rich.
Right.
Yeah, it's you know, that maybe that's why they're so easy to speak in the words right. of the left, because they're not talking about, when they say us, they don't mean us, like you, me, and, you know, Jim Bob down the street, you know. They mean us, me, you know, Naomi Klein, Avi
Select
Lewis.
Select geographic
The
areas.
Rockefeller, yeah. you know, Susan Rockefeller, who is, you know, paid for right. half of This Changes Everything, Naomi Klein's
it's like
documentary.
Manhattan, Beverly Hills.
Yeah, Silicon Valley, Wall Street.
Washington, D.C. Yeah.
Langley. We gotta protect the CIA,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
You know, Munich,
Seattle,
keep Merkel. Yeah.
West Vancouver.
Yeah, West Vancouver. Shaughnessy.
Yeah.
South Surrey.
South Surrey. Not the rest of Surrey.
No.
You know, that's who us is, yeah. right? You know. Okay, so here's a quote from John Rockefeller. He once stated that the ability to deal with people is as purchasable a commodity as sugar and coffee, and I will pay more for that ability than for any other under the sun. Wow.
Hmm.
This is where we're at, people, right? You know, we're between a rock and a hard place. You know, these corporations are selling us this environmental garbage, right? Right. So we, you know, you push through, you know, the many layers. So you have AOC, which reactionaries write off. Oh, she's a, you know, she's Cuban, she's a communist, mm. she's from Puerto Rico, but, you know, that's besides the point. You know, then you become, you know, a liberal that's like, oh yeah, climate change is real, but, you know, we need market mechanisms. You go into like more of a, you know, a social democrat that's like, yeah, you know, Bernie Sanders will save us. And then you realize, you know, once you go a little bit past that, so whatever left tendency you are past that rabbit hole, you realize that this is actually all, you know, a spectacle. It's yeah. all, you know, it's all kabuki theater, because, you know, the people who really control the world, BlackRock, you know, the Rockefellers, IKEA even.
Right.
It's kind of funny that they're in there. It seems like a very benign, you know, they're not like Raytheon.
I don't think about it, but yeah.
Well, that's how they do it.
Yeah,
right?
It's like, oh, they have great hot dogs, Spencer. How right. dare you?
Toys R Us isn't evil.
Yeah, I know. No, IKEA, very evil.
Wow.
They're very evil Swedes. Very evil Swedes. Mm. But yeah, so like, but you know, regardless they're good or evil, that's not the point. The point right. is they're in control.
Mm. Right.
IKEA controls us. Very strange thought to have, I know. But, you know, these people.
What kind of do? You can't even.
They're in the driver's seat of our own money. Though, which is, you know, what yeah. what I wish, you know, the workers of the world could wake up to, which is that, you know, we produce the value
yeah.
and they spend it on war
right.
crap, Google Homes, Alexas, Amazon one day delivery, and then that whole system collapses because it's completely unsustainable
right.
so then they turn to us and take our money to spend it again
and to further exploit and alienate us,
which right. you know, the world's already screwed up. Yeah. Suicides are through the roof, drug addictions through the roof, homelessness is through the mm. roof, racist terror attacks, you know, happen mm. all the time. You don't even flinch now when there's a school shooting or a mass shooting and some, you know, guy saying subscribe to PewDiePie after he shoots up a mosque. Like, that's just the normal world. Mm. So imagine how much worse it's going to get
right.
once this goes through, right? Mm. Okay, so, you know, that's the background to all this. You know, like, I know this is a lot of information and I feel really bad for everybody, but,
no,
you know, this is what, you know, we need to look through. So that's right. like, that is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's Green New Deal. And now we've looked at the people who are behind it, such as IKEA of all people.
Right.
And now we look at, you know, the Canadian Green New Deal. So this is the Power to Change announcement by the NDP. This is Jagmeet Singh is, you know, he's literally signed it. You can look at the PDF. He has a signature in it. Urgent action on climate change, you know, making life better for all Canadians and creating good jobs. How are we going to go about it? Right. So we even look into the document. You know, they're doing the same thing. So it's infrastructure investments. We have low carbon renewables and stuff like that. Pictures of windmills, which is ironic because you would think that for, you know, environmental document, you'd have like pictures of the ocean, you know, the most beautiful things, the glaciers, you know, even like desert, like just like right. all the beautiful environments that we have here. But no, there's a windmill instead, because that's what this is all about, right?
Right.
It's building more of this
green
crap
infrastructure.
Yeah, right. Which is, in my opinion, you know, a huge, huge mistake. You know, we don't need more stuff. We need less stuff, right? That's where we're going. So now instead, you know, we're going to have zero emissions vehicles, according to this document. You know, it's not, although they do talk about transit, that's good. However, you know, we need to go away from, you know, the auto manufacturers, which is who this is going to help out.
Tesla, right?
You're right, you know. What's everyone going to do? Drive a Tesla or drive a Prius? You know, we don't need more stuff, right? We need actual changes and, you know, a different way of organizing society.
Right,
you know, maybe you wouldn't need a zero emission vehicle if you didn't have to work all the time. Because, like, what are we working for at this point, too? That's another question, you know.
To pay into a pension we can't even control?
No, to pay into a pension that's going to be stolen from us or even, and to buy crap that we don't need to make us feel better about working 40 hours a week for nothing.
Right.
You know, like, when are we going to deal and with those
put our
problems?
Put our kids through the system and feel gratitude about doing that because that's how brainwashed we are.
Exactly. And it's like, at what point do we take a step back and be like, that whole ideology, all that crap we've been doing for generations has led to the climate killing us all.
Right.
So, you know, maybe it's time to go away from that.
It's like you keep saying we're like in between like a rock and a hard place. I think we're like a rock and a cliff's edge, right? And the rock's either like, you know, we're about to fall off the edge or just get crushed by it.
Yeah.
And the rock's going to push us off.
That's a great metaphor. So if you go to part six, so this is like the really damning stuff where we get into like all my trigger words. So we have net carbon free electricity by 2030. And once again, what is net carbon free means always means that, you know, as much as you put into the air, you take out, which requires carbon capture technology, which is not even invented. And the people who do all the patents, Bill Gates, you know, Harvard owns this informational property for this stuff. Sorry, intellectual property. So, you know, who are we helping? You know, is this helping indigenous communities? Like, sure, you know, maybe they get some scraps from Bill Gates once he's done. He's already the second, you know, the second richest man on earth. What does he need?
Right.
But we, because we're being led, not astray, but on this corporate path by these corporate the corporate stooges, like, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Naomi Klein. We end up, you know, trying to help ourselves, but all we can end up doing is helping people like Bill Gates, you know? Fuck Bill Gates, you know, we don't...
He doesn't need help.
He's the problem, you know, these rich people are the problem. Betsy DeVos's 40 yachts is the problem.
Yeah.
You know, they're not the solution. We don't need them. And if we go deeper into the NDP thing, you know, we're going to establish a Canadian climate bank. What is that?
Who knows?
We, like, you know, who's going to be in charge of the bank? Is it going to be a new federal, you know, central bank for Canada?
Right.
You know,
it's just going to lend to corporations who build this crap. Like, I don't
and then
get
where's
it.
The money going to come from?
Right.
What's going into the Canadian Climate Bank? Oh yeah, just like we discussed, the $100 trillion of the workers of the world's pension. So Canadian pension plans are going to be dumped into the Canadian Climate Bank, You get paid from your own pension plan.
Right. And the Canadian Pension Fund is one of the biggest in the world. And, you know.
Wow. It would be a shame if that went into my corporation, would it, Ajit? So
they already planned that.
Part six, powering our communities carbon-free. That also means an interconnect power grid and introduce smart grid technology with federal loan guarantees. So...
Smart is good.
Yeah, smart, good. Oh, wait, smart means surveillance. So, you know, who owns the intellectual property for that? You know, once again, Silicon Valley, right? Google's building a smart city in Toronto. You know, you don't have to think too hard to figure out, like, what that means, which surveillance technology being paid for by these, you know, dubious corporations. And also, I just want to debunk quickly before we go on. Google was not built in some guy's garage. That's not how it happened at all. It was paid for. They both went to Stanford, obviously. They say that openly. But they were being paid by the CIA to build a search engine for the CIA, and in exchange they just gave it to them as a gift for the stuff they worked on with taxpayer money. That's what Google is.
Right.
So, you know, the line between fascism and democracy I think has been crossed a long time ago, considering that most of your iPhone, you know, here's my rant about capitalism isn't real, but, you know, most of your iPhone is paid for with, you know, Pentagon technology, you know, the internet was invented at MIT, you know, touch screen technology is used by the Air Force, so is GPS, you know, I think that was created, so, you know, it's just like radar technology too, like, people,
I think even so, the airplane model came from like an original bomber design.
It's all paid for by us.
Right.
So, you know, once again, we're doing the same thing again, people. So I'm just saying, you know, this isn't the first time this has happened, everybody. The public has paid for stuff, then has had to buy it back from a corporation. And I'm just saying, we don't do this again.
Yeah, and you explain it well, like the line between like democracy or like liberal democracy to fascism was crossed a long time ago. And that is literally what's happened because fascism historically is... the merger of state and public treasuries and the banks. And on top of that, it develops out of liberal democracy. Not to say liberal democracy is like wrong to have all of our mm-hmm. civil rights, mm-hmm. but it develops out of that in capitalism. Absolutely. So basically what's happening now, we're seeing it happen in live time, which was why I'm really paying attention to mm-hmm. it, is we're seeing a switch from the rights of the individual that are defended in the Bill of Rights, for instance, in the U.S., being shifted towards rights protecting the government and the ruling class. Mm-hmm. And for instance, an example of this, although it is actually happening in the Green New Deal, this protection of the rights of the ruling class versus individuals, which mm-hmm. is what liberal democracy is what's happening with this unconstitutional abortion ban in Alabama, because abortion that was won in Roe versus Wade was dependent on the constitutional amendment of the individual's right to privacy within the limit that the state's interests are in there as well, because like the state has some interest in abortion, for instance. But if it's actually, you know, if this ban is passed, then the right to privacy of the individual is also at harm, and the government has their right to transgress this. So we're also seeing this loss of our right to privacy as individuals.
Oh, absolutely.
From abortion to like what's happening with the deportations at the border and mm-hmm. ICE, to what's happening with the Green New Deal, to what's happening with surveillance. So yeah. It's actually all in this interconnected fascist project, and we really have to, you know, connect the dots and see it, that we're living in that, in mm-hmm. that fascist.
It's all out there. It's on the internet. You know, you don't yeah. have to look very hard. Just go on the CIA Twitter feed. You know, you'll yeah. see a lot of crazy stuff that's yeah. happening. For everybody just tuning in, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from NCMS Scream Territory. We are looking at the Green New Deal, and, you know, once we get to the end, page 20 of the 22-page document, part 8, getting results. So, you know, there's $15 billion of investments, which will once again come from our public pension funds. You know, once again, not above taking the money from, you know, from all of us and pooling it together to do stuff that helps all of us. I'm all for that. However, we've demonstrated time and time again, these projects are not the property of the people. We give the money to a corporation, or even worse, we put it into a banking structure like the Canadian Climate Bank, which then gives it to the corporation, which will take, you know, the interest from those loans will go to the state. So, you know, we're completely cut out of this situation. And that's why we oppose it. So this is not coming from an anti-collective ideology. Let me just say that my personal ideology is very collectivist. I really believe that, you know, the workers of the world can work together and build a better society without the bosses. But that's another story for another day. So, you know, we have $15 billion of investments, $2.5 billion on creating good jobs. So, you know, that means everyone's building a frickin' windmill every day, you know, which, once again, does not solve the problem of building more stuff. We need less stuff. And, you know, the materials are going to have to come from somewhere, and it's probably going to come from the global south while we pillage more and more from countries that we're bombing. And then if we $3.5 billion to spur the transition to renewable energy, in addition to funds leveraged through the Canadian Climate Bank. So that's $3.5 billion for sure. That's coming out of everyone's pockets to pay for the renewable energy industry, which is, you know, it sounds green and it looks green, but those solar panels and windmills, once again, got to come from somewhere. And right. that has its own cost. And there's, you know, and they reference Paris, right? So the Paris targets, right? You know, on my personal, you know, AMS campaign, I talked about the Paris Agreement because I was like, oh, Paris Agreement is good. You know, Trump pulled out of the Paris Agreement. That's bad. But what is the Paris Agreement? So I, you know, I did some digging and I found a fantastic quote. This is from Clive Spash of, you know, Vienna University of Economics and Business. So big deal. You know, he's from Europe, people. Great title, too. This changes nothing. The Paris Agreement to Ignore Reality. What a great title. So he says, the Paris Agreement signifies commitment to sustained industrial growth, risk management over disaster prevention, and future inventions and technology as savior. The primary commitment of the international community is to maintain the current social and economic system, which we've demonstrated time and time again. You know, we're going to keep America as the number one imperial nation on Earth. And the result of that is denial that tackling greenhouse gas emissions is incompatible with sustained economic growth. The reality is that nation states and international corporations are engaged in an unremitting and ongoing expansion of fossil fuel energy exploration, extraction, and combustion, and the construction of related infrastructure for production and consumption. The targets and promises of the Paris Agreement bear no relationship to biophysical or social and economic reality. We can see that. So if, you know, if you don't think that fossil fuels are doing the damn thing, what's happening up north, right? You know, the Wet'suwet'en people are having a pipeline built right through through their territory, right? Mm-hmm. Fracking is happening all over. That's horrible for the environment. Right. You know, they're opening the Arctic to drilling. That's what Obama came up with, and now Trump is using the military to set up shop up there. So, right. You know, we're not living in this, you know, NGO paradise. You know, the 350, which is once again paid for by the Rockefeller Foundation, is trying to push us into. That's not happening. That's not reality. Right. You know, it's what we all wish. You know, I click like on Facebook to make it feel like that's reality, but it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, and as leftists, you know, it's our job to critique reality, right? You know, not what we believe, what our ideas of the world are, but what the real world
right.
is. And this is the unfortunate, economic reality. Nusha, do you have any thoughts on the fossil fuel expansion, maybe in the imperial context? And how that kind of interrelates, like what's going on right now with imperialism and fossil fuels.
Right. So and a lot of our people here, AOC and everything, are intermixed in this with their votes and imperialist policies, even though we don't see that in what they're saying. What's happening in the Middle East is that there's large oil reserves in Iran, obviously, and then in South America, it's in Venezuela. And these countries are under like constant imperialist sanctions and threats of war. And we see like the Iran.
And they have regimes. They don't have governments.
Well, yeah, actually, yeah. And that's a really important point because that's, I know it's like a funny thing. It's just this one word, but there is 7 years of propaganda based off of this one concept of make a cartoon of the foreign country's leader, call them a dictator, and then call their system of democratic government a regime. Which is funny because in Iran, it's actually based off of democracy where people elect, and Venezuela also has the freest elections.
Most elections ever in the entire world.
Even Jimmy Carter, but like also a lot of a lot of international observers called it the freest and the fairest elections of the world. But the caricature helps with the concept of like U.S. imperialist domination, humanitarian saviorism, all of the different angles that they've developed this. But there's definitely oil in all of these places are all under threat. Even what's happening in Gaza and Palestine has to do also with oil in Syria because they want to build a pipeline carrying oil from Iran through Iraq into Syria. That was actually one of the threats and one of the pretexts for the war there because the U.S. was like, no, this pipeline has to go from Syria through Qatar into Saudi Arabia, our client states, the Gulf states, which are like the U.S. outposts and client states there. They refused to have like the oil nationalized and belonging to the people in the region and in their own economic interests or trade or whatever infrastructure they want to build. That was actually the pretext for one of the pretexts for the war on Syria, which we don't hear about. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it has to do with the U.S. access to fossil fuels in these places who are nationalizing their resources for the people as it should be. Mm-hmm. The U.S. wants to break that apart. But like as like we know that fossil fuels aren't gonna last forever, I don't think I have an exact stat on like how long they're gonna last. All of these wars,
it's a finite resource to say the least.
Right. All of these wars that are happening there give A, US control and B, US access to like totally salting the land, which they're doing in the Middle East, making land that was formerly arable not prone to agriculture at all, mm-hmm. you know, dispossessing the people's relationship to the land there so that it actually becomes totally uninhabitable for the people living in these oil wealthy places so that they can become US like military access to oil in these regions. So it's
very
like
Mad Max-esque.
Very, mm-hmm. yeah, very. Yeah,
just like kill off like all life, but just keep the oil.
Yeah, as climate change is happening.
Which will then empty out the Middle East because it'll be too hot for humanity to live. So
right.
I have another quote for us. This is from Kitty Vander Heijend, the director of the World Resources Institute, Europe and Africa. So this is the World Resources Institute is a I'm pretty sure it's like a kind of a corporate think tank with the largest banks and corporations sitting on the board. Just a quote, the failure to price our natural capital on which our wealth and well-being depends is a serious failure in the global capital market. Worth many trillions of dollars in financial assets, the global capital market shapes the world we live in and which our children will inherit. So this is from 2016. So well before the talk of, oh, what are we going to do with our what world are we giving to our children? And before talking about the carbon tax and carbon pricing. And well, I guess actually cap and trade was on its way in 2016. But besides that, what they're discussing here in this quote is that, you know, what's the problem with the world? Is it the war, death, and destruction? Is it the overproduction? Is it turning the natural world into crappy commodities like Alexas and Nike shoes and clothes that fill up every landfill? No, the problem is that we're not, you know, we're not pricing our natural capital properly, right? So this is what part of the project of the Green New Deal, which is, you know, and AOC puts it, says it in the goals, which is promoting the international exchange of technology, expertise, products, funding, and services with the aim of making the United States the international leader on climate action. So, you know, in regular people speak, it's, you know, can we create enough financial instruments which are, you know, like carbon offsets, which are like carbon credits where you can basically pay to pollute or pay to destroy parts of the natural world or pay to turn the natural world into commodity. So adding just more pricing onto our current economic structure, right? So right now it's like, oh, I just like buy up the land, which is, you know, kind of an insane idea anyways. Like, what do you own this patch of the earth? That's, you know, that's stupid. Like, that's impossible. But, you know, right. That's our just ideology covering that part up for us.
Right.
But, you know, oh, I can buy this like patch of land with all these trees on it, mow down the trees, you know, turn that all into paper or whatever they want to turn into and sell it through Dunder Mifflin. But instead, you know, they're, you know, now it's like, oh, you have to pay to destroy each individual tree. And that's the solution to it. Not just don't cut down the tree.
It's like, it's just a penalty.
Yeah, it's just, it's an extra, like, tax, right? And they're just, and America's looking to be the one in charge of those taxes and setting that price, you know?
Right.
And these people are just, you know, worried about, you know, why aren't we pricing it properly?
Right.
Like, that's the problem with climate change. Not the fact that, like, you know, maybe the natural world isn't ours to destroy.
Well, it's like, once you agree to, like, some sort of notion of carbon offsetting, whatever that is, right? It's vague in itself. You're already conceding defeat, right?
You're playing on their court.
Slow down the death a little.
We're trying to speak in the language that these, you know, Wall Street types will understand, you know, rather than maybe being like, hey, these, you know, this group of like 1,000 people can just go pound sand. We don't really care. They don't really do anything. They just move stuff. They just move money from account to.
Arbitrage, right?
Yeah. Yet they're worth millions of dollars. It's not like they produce millions of dollars in that office tower. It doesn't make any sense. Ugh, sorry, I'm getting a call from UBC's Sauder School of Business. I wonder what that's about.
Excuse me. Do you know how interest rates work?
Do you know who my father is? Yeah. It's,
do you know who donated to this plaza?
Yeah. You know who bought this university? HSBC. And I guess that, you know, this is why the Green New Deal is so important. And as we're, you know, winding down for time, you know, maybe we can discuss, you know, where to go from here. So, you know, to sum up, it basically seems that, you know, even our resistance to corporations is owned by the corporations. So it looks like you're rebelling against big oil, but big oil's already got their, you know, they've already figured out their plan and they're working with the banks that finance big oil to just shift the money from that capital, like Nusha explained earlier, into new investments, which then must proceed because, just like Al Gore said, you know, it's the shifting of the money isn't going to save it on its own. You know, we need World War III to jumpstart the economy.
Right.
So
and we don't want that.
No, and we don't want that.
Because
when I say we, I mean normal people.
Like 99% of the people.
People who make less than 250K.
Right.
We do not want World War III.
Yeah.
Right. And even if you do make more than 250K, you're just
Well, them, I'm just like, yeah, you might end up in the re-education camp, so I'm not going to help you. But yeah, so for normal people, you know, we need to start thinking, you know, what are we going to do, you know? And I think, you know, the first step is, you know, getting this information out here.
Right.
So, you know, like, that's why I put this together was, you know, mostly just to be, you know, to air some things out. Like, I'm sure it's a lot of information and it's not easy to digest, but I think the gist is pretty fair that, you know, they're going to take our money, pay for a bunch of stuff that is going to harm us and is not going to help the climate, which is why we all got into environmentalism in the first place. Save the planet, right?
Right. It's not even meeting the main
no,
idea.
No, not even close.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, is doing nothing that we want. Because then at least, you know, if it was saving the planet, then I guess I could be like, okay, I guess capitalism will save it. But it can't. The system can't even do that.
Yeah.
It's political greenwashing is what it is. It's,
leading into World War III because,
right,
you know.
Right. Because everything's a precursor to war, right?
So. Well, why would you mobilize for war if you're not going to have a war?
Right.
You know, that's a sad thing no one's going to say, right?
Not my kids.
Hashtag not my country. And the worst thing is, so and in Canada, we're already, you know, bending the knee to the United States. We're like so fast on it. The NDP, you know, our pseudo left party has already, you know, cranked out, you know, how they're gonna go along with American hegemony and keep America as the world imperialist power.
Right.
Mm. So, you know, we're already part way, if not all the way there. Nusha, do you have any thoughts on, you know, we're preparing for war, and so that means we're going to lead into World War III. There's 130,000 American troops stationed in the Middle East. Same amount before the illegal Iraq war. What are your thoughts on imperialism? Are we going to be seeing a new, you know, Gulf of Tonkin, a new 9/11. WMD, 9/11, don't get us in trouble. But yeah, the 9/11 did help do a lot of the heavy lifting for Islamophobia and invading the Middle East. So
yeah, it's funny that you asked that, because are we going to see a new Gulf of Tonkin? Yeah, we've been constantly seeing it, and I'm just laughing because I've been getting to a habit of turning off my phone in general and like deleting my apps and looking at less, because usually I'm so tuned into the news media spectacle, and I'm like pointing out all of these fake like weapons of mass destruction propaganda or like Gulf of Tonkin, and I've stopped doing that, but I still see it all the time. But the thing is that, yeah, it's been happening. So for instance, in Syria, the chemical weapons allegations from the Syrian government are a Gulf of Tonkin, and I say that because the Syrian government doesn't have chemical weapons since like 2012. That was like, you know, agreed upon by the UN, and only the US has chemical weapons.
Very inconvenient fact.
Very inconvenient fact, but that's just an example. And that was recent. That was like last year, 2 years ago. That's the Gulf of Tonkin, you know, allowing for war on Syria and then to Russia and Iran by proxy. Or, you know, what's happening in Ukraine. There's constant like propaganda there. What happened in Venezuela, where they're saying like I don't know if it's the New York Times or who put up this picture of a Venezuelan supermarket that was totally empty. That was like the Gulf of Tonkin there, was that the people don't have any food in the supermarkets. Right. But then they realized that was a picture from Manhattan or New York or something.
Right. Where people actually eat out of the garbage. Like in Vancouver, there's people eating out of trash. You know, when is China going to invade us? You know, President Xi, free our people.
Right. No,
I'm under oppression from my boss.
Exactly. And I feel like you pointed out totally, Spencer, like, yes, we're in a world war mobilization time. And the only reason that the media would make so much propaganda about it is because they're anticipating or wanting or planning for it to happen. What can we do on our end? Well, I mean, there's only so much of a limit of what's going to happen of you just knowing the truth, but knowing the truth is powerful. Like, what is the show for? But yeah, if you can see like the propaganda, like the US propaganda anticipating for war in other countries, then you start to see it all the time. You start to see it everywhere, even in this like Russiagate thing. I think it's one of these things that it's like, once the glass shatters for you, once you have the paradigm shift and you've seen it one time, like the U.S. propaganda that gives them some kind of like legal or media or something propulsion into war, illegal war. Once you see it one time, you start to see it everywhere. And then you start the liberal arguments to you. It's not even like about which side you're on. You're just like, this is all just a mirage.
It's theater. Yeah, it's just theater. Like these like actors, you know, like, you know,
theater of the mind.
It is. And it just plays to people's like worst tendencies, like their tribal, like, oh, I'm a Democrat and I'm on team this, and then I'm on team Republican. Right. But it's like, you know, like it's two wings of the same bird.
I think, and one of the biggest failures of historiography, you know, the field that we're also familiar with, is like programming us to believe all these, like, you know, you don't even assume, like, you just assume the Middle East is messed up. You don't.
Yeah.
And the New York Times article will just reaffirm that belief, right? And you assume South America is filled with dictators and people like to be oppressed or whatever, right? It's
just nuts,
right? Yeah. And then fascism only looks like Hitler. That's another ruse.
Yeah,
totally. Right. It all hinges on this like classic American patriot model, which is also a model of like racism about other countries. But it all hinges on the fact that like, if you work hard enough, you can achieve anything. And once you base it off that meritocracy, then yes, you go around, you say all these people.
Nusha, you mentioned patriotism. You mentioned historiography, so maybe you can end us out with another great message of propaganda happening on this very day. This is the anniversary of D-Day.
Oh, is it? Yes, it is.
We're celebrating D-Day and the brave sacrifice of opening the Western Front, which supposedly
that
changed
the
war.
Europe,
that
right?
won the war, right? Right? So do you have any? Maybe that whole battle of what was that? That guy, Uncle Joe Stalingrad. Yeah. Maybe that had something to do with it. What are your thoughts on this historiography around D-Day? And we're talking about mobilizing for war. Mm. We're talking about the Green New Deal. And we're talking about, getting to the good old days of, D-Day.
Storming the beaches of Normandy. I haven't thought of D-Day
was it a turning point?
One thing that I was thinking about when you were saying that is I have this friend who's a professor of, law and genocide. So she looks at the world wars and stuff at a university in the U.S. And one anecdote that she told me, she's a very accomplished woman, and she's in her 50s, and she said in all of her years of teaching World War II, when coming to the question, who liberated Auschwitz, she was like, in all the years of teaching, and you should not one person, not one student has ever given me the correct answer, that it was the Soviet Union. That's how deep,
Cue the international. Alexa, play the international.
Play the American anthem.
Play the international.
Yeah, I think this context of the millions of Soviets that died in saving the world from fascism.
Men and women.
And then after the fact that the U.S. government, Bush's grandfather, and the Washington Post did a reporting on this a few years ago. Bush's grandfather, before the war even happened, had major bank investments with the Nazi Party.
Of course.
In the U.S. So a lot of the U.S., benefit after World War II is from the capital from Nazi Party.
Nazi scientists go straight into NASA.
Exactly. So, this CIA. this is the angle of World War II that we don't learn at Canadian schools, too.
Wait,
so
it wasn't a battle of good and evil that we didn't have the triumphant, very simple story?
Yeah.
It's not how history played out?
Yeah, it's really a story of colonialism.
It is. And, World War I, imperialist war about the Sykes-Picot Agreement, totally about dividing up the colonies and dividing up the Ottoman Empire leads straight into World War II, where it's a new dividing up of the new world. And except this one will be the neo-colonial world, and we'll just have those Africans oppress themselves. We'll have Asians oppress themselves, and if God forbid,
create that class-based society.
And if you want to revolt against that class-based society, then we'll send in the CIA to come kill you. And that's the new world order we're living in. We've still been living in it. Shouts out to Fidel, surviving how many dozens of assassination attempts?
687.
something crazy. That's the world we're living in, and now. What's our new world? And instead of having the CIA do the dirty work, we could just put a Google Home in everyone's home, in everyone's place.
Totally.
Have Alexas all over the place. Have a smart city. Why don't you? And that's why we oppose the Green New Deal. And hopefully this makes the case of why the Green New Deal is if anything should be questioned. If I haven't made up anyone's mind or made up my own. Well, I've made up my own mind on this. Hell no to the Green New Deal.
Yeah.
But I think we need just a revolution, actual change. And I'm hoping that more people pick up on this lead, and people especially who say that they're socialists, because now it's cool to be a socialist, right? Bernie's a socialist.
Mm.
My dog's a socialist. Everyone's a socialist now, right? But if you, are actually concerned with monopoly capitalism and, the fact that we're looking at, the public and the private basically becoming one and the same and going straight into this kind of eco-fascism, green imperialist world, if that bothers you, if you think that, maybe war should stop, let's take a look at the Green New Deal. It has nothing to do with anything.
Right.
Mm. Let's keep consuming. Let's keep turning the world into iPhones, Let's not stop for a second. Let's not, become somewhat of a harmonic civilization where we can actually, where we're not constantly looking. I was walking around on my break at work, and I was like, man, we really are atomized. You don't even look other people in the eye anymore.
No. It's awkward.
It's weird, man. It's oh my God, another human, And how do we transcend that?
We have the power for that, at least.
To look someone in the eye. Hopefully, but and then hopefully you can pick up this audio file and be like, you know what, maybe those Rockefellers are up to no good. you know.
Do they even exist?
Maybe IKEA is not just this banal, you know, a furniture store, you know. Sure, it's cool. They have the cheap hot dogs, but, you know, that.
They use horse meat. That proves they're evil.
Yeah, right. They're not vegans. So right. We have to oppose them. Yeah. So, you know, I'm looking for a Green New Deal, you know, maybe without the American jingoism attached to it. Maybe just how about eco-socialism, or, you know, just socialism in general, mm-hmm. and a real transition. Because if anyone says to my face, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a commie, I'm like, I wish. You know, this stuff is, you know, this is like Woodrow Wilson's like wet dream, right. of imperialism. Yeah. Here.
Just like Obama was a socialist.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like Obama is Lenin. Okay. So this will conclude our conversation for today. Nusha, thank you so much for coming out.
Thank you.
My trusty co-host, Ajit, thank you for coming and chatting. If you want to listen to our amazing catalog of shows, check out the Spencer Latu Show on Apple iTunes Podcast. Get it. Me on social media, Spencer Latu. Thank you so much for listening, and you know, God forbid, read the documents that you're supposed to love, because, you know, sometimes you'll learn a lot, it'll let you down, but I still think it's better to know than to not know.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, goodbye everybody.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about bike maintenance in a relaxed environment led by queer mechanics and volunteers. It takes place on the fourth Wednesday of every month at the Bike Kitchen on UBC's campus. Bring your own bike and fix them with our tools, come with questions and ask away, or learn by watching other folks work on their bikes. Beginners are always welcome. This event is entirely free to attend, and there will be free pizza. For more information, visit bikecoop.ca.
We are so happy because Fun Drive 2019 is officially over. What a great feeling. To everyone who donated their time, their energy, and their money, the people who forgot to donate now but will online at citr.ca